I am going to introduce Christy Ambule. Christy went to Oklahoma State University, and that is where she met Jesus, and her life was transformed by his love and his gospel. She has been married to Ben for 15 years. She's worked in parachurch or church ministry for 9 years while taking a 9-year break in the middle to be a stay-at-home mom. She's been on staff with Perimeter since 2014 and directs the community group and resident development ministries. She's a certified practitioner of Myers-Briggs type indicator and the Murphy-Meisgeier type indicator for children. She loves meeting with parents and children to help them identify ways that they can better understand and appreciate their unique God-given gifts, which I love that part of her heart, because it's not just how you're wired, but it's your unique God-given gifts. And like seeing those early in your child is so helpful for the way you help nurture and raise them. Christy lives in Johns Creek with her husband, her 4 children, her 3 dogs, and her 2 pets that aren't a dog or cat, 2 goats. So, y'all, welcome Christy. I'm sure you are going to love hearing from her this morning.
Got it. I'm so glad to be here with you all. And the very first time I walked through the doors of Perimeter Church was to come to something called Moms and More that was a predecessor to Moms Connect 13 years ago. No, yes, 13 years ago when my oldest was a baby. So it's fun to be with you guys today. And the thing that I loved about Moms and More was it was a great place to connect with moms, to be encouraged, and to be equipped. And so my desire this morning is that it would just be a great time of encouragement and equipping, and that you would maybe leave with just one little nugget that you can apply to your life, to your maybe recognizing something about your identity in Christ, or seeing something new that's really beautiful in your child or your children. I did want to check. I think most, does anybody in here have children under 6? I mean, above 6. Anybody have anyone over 6? Just one. Okay. Because that's going to kind of impact how we flow this morning, because our personality, there's some things that we see really early in our children, and there's some things that kind of we start to see later. So we're going to focus on the things that we see really early to help you all. And a lot of times it's about 6 or 7 when we start to see some of these other traits develop. Sound good? Okay, well, my husband is Ben, and we have been married for 15 years, and we really got interested in personality because when we first got married, as we were dating, we loved the differences in each other. We kind of liked how we complimented one another, and then we got married, and it was rough. It was rough, you guys. And someone challenged my husband in that area and said, when you're trying to change your spouse, you are doing the opposite of worship. You're saying something that God calls good, you're saying that it's wrong. And that was really convicting to him, and it started just a new chapter in our lives. So we began to investigate and learn more about our personalities, and then 6 or 7 years ago now, we were both certified with Myers-Briggs. We did that together. It was really fun to go through that process together with the Myers-Briggs Personality Indicator. And I, in that process, realized, man, I would love to know more about my children's personalities and how I can parent them better and understand them better. And they offered something that was specific to children. And so I went ahead and got certified in that too. And so I asked my children before I was meeting with you if I could share with you their Myers-Briggs personality types. So I have those on here. These are our 4 kids. Liza Jane is 13, which means that she's like a roller coaster of thinking and feeling. So she isn't really sure. We think she has a thinking preference, but she might have a feeling preference. But she's 13, so there's a lot of feelings happening no matter what. So we're giving her an X. And that's one thing I do want to say. we're not going to walk away from here today with like a clear understanding of your children's personality. I hope you can walk away with a clear understanding of yours. But your children are, they know themselves really better than you do. And you get to be kind of like a detective, investigating them and learning about them and listening to them. And as you do that, you'll understand more. But they'll tell you, and hopefully as you get older, they'll be able to tell you more about themselves. So that's what I've done with my four children, is they have taken the assessment that is for children, and then we've kind of talked through all of that. And so that's how we know what their letters are. And the boys have a lot of clarity around theirs, which is really fun. So I would encourage you today, you may make some guesses, but don't clearly say, okay, this is what my child is, because they might surprise you. Our Beckett, who is an INTJ, I really thought he was something different. And he took the assessment, even while he was taking it. I was like, are you sure? Are you sure about that? He was like, yes, Mom, I'm sure. And we got finished. I'm like, okay. So there he is. A little bit about the Myers-Briggs. It is looking at your true type, okay? It's looking at how you were made, and you are going to develop a lot of other skills, but you have some inborn characteristics. So that's really what we're going to look at today. But we layer those. I like to think of it like an onion. We kind of layer our personality with all the things that we want to be or think that we should be. And so we don't always act what is really true to who we are. Some of that's healthy and some of it's not. So we'll kind of unload some of that today. But here's just a thought. If y'all want to look at this, this is our oughts and shoulds of our personality. This is how we get kind of layered like an onion. So you can look at that and think, does anything stand out to you as a way that you may have been layered a little bit by an ought or should? In the South, for women, our culture is very, has a lot to say about how women should think and behave. So sometimes that can really layer us if we tend to be a female who maybe is a little bit more assertive or more tenacious. We might feel like the ought and should is, okay, I need to be meek, I need to be a little quieter, I need to be more compassionate, those kind of things. So there's an example, and y'all might get to talk about that some more. I'm going to skip this one. So we're going to do an exercise, okay? Does everybody have pen and paper at their table? Okay. I want you to take your paper and a pen and sign your name with your dominant hand, okay? If you had your regular signature, if you were signing the check. And this is not a test. Okay. Okay, after you do that, put your pen on your other hand, and now sign your name. How did it feel? Just shout out some words. You can just do like one-liners, but how did it feel to sign your name with your dominant hand? Natural. Easy. Didn't have to think about it. Okay. What about signing it with your non-dominant hand? Awkward. Difficult. You're thinking about it. Slow. Crooked. Yeah. How does it look? It was harder, and it doesn't look quite the same, quite as well, right? Well, that is really a good analogy for our personalities. So we're going to be looking at four different dichotomies in our personality, and you're going to have one that's just going to be, it's just going to be more natural. It's going to be like signing with your dominant hand. You're just going to, it's going to be where your first foot forward into the world. And then you're going to have another side of your personality. You use it. You have to use it. I mean, we didn't have I'm right-handed. If I didn't have my left hand, I'd been in a whole lot of trouble, right? Like, I need my left hand. I use it a lot, but there's not the skill or the dexterity with it. It takes more effort to use it. So when we talk about our personality and our children's, we're going to have things that we're going to say, well, I'm a little bit of both. You are, you have to be, we all have to be. But what we're going to try to really filter through is what is the most natural, kind of what's dominant to you. Does that sound good? Okay. Well, I'm going to pray and then we are going to get started on that part. Holy God, I do just come to you in gratitude, Father, that you are our creator. You're our Father God. You have designed this world. You have designed us, and you've designed our families exactly as you have them to be. We do know, too, though, that we are part of a broken world, and so we don't operate perfectly, and there is brokenness in us. So, Lord, would you just heal us where we're hurting, and just help us to see the beauty in how you have created us uniquely in your image, and also that we would see the beauty in our husbands and in our children, and that we would call that out and say that that is good. And I thank you for this time. I pray it would just be a sweet respite in the busy week and the busy days of parenting little bitties. And I thank you that these moms are here, that they got up and got dressed and made it here. So we pray that our sweet kiddos would just have a good morning, and that they would be invested in as well. In Jesus' name, amen. Okay, so because I was saying we're gonna talk about extroversion and introversion, which is our preferred source of energy. We're going to also make sure we talk about judging and perceiving, which is our preferred lifestyle. Those are the two letters that you can see pretty early in your children, and I'll give you some examples of those. And then if we can, we'll go to those middle two letters, which are extremely important. It's what we call the heart of our type, but it's not as easy to see real early on, okay? Okay, so extroversion and introversion is our preferred source of energy, and we're going to talk about ourselves first, and then we'll talk about our kids, okay? So extroverts are, I like to think of extroverts as being solar powered. They're going to get their energy from external sources, okay? So people, activities, those type of things are really conversations, that all those things are very energizing to an extrovert. Someone with a preference for introversion is going to get their energy more, they're more battery powered. So they're going to get their energy more from like their internal world of thoughts and ideas, and they're going to really like to recharge by being alone or being with a really small group. And so that's kind of what we just talked about. Okay, so here's some things to think about. This is some things about an extrovert. Someone who prefers extroversion is usually more active over reflective. They might even use that to kind of cope. You know, if things get stressful, they're going to want to do more. Okay, they talk things over in order to understand them. If anyone says, "Oh, I'm an external processor," they're probably an extrovert. And they prefer to communicate face to face and share their thoughts freely. Every extrovert has at some point said, like, put their foot in their mouth. It's just part of speaking before you think. And they really usually have a lot of broad interests and a lot of friendships, but maybe not quite the amount of depth that maybe an introvert would have. But they have a lot of friends and a lot of things they're interested in. They like to put themselves in the foreground, and they act and respond quickly. So they're going to do, and then they're going to think about it, and then they might do again. Okay, whereas an introvert is usually the opposite. An introvert is going to think before they act. They're going to act, and then they're going to actually think again and really analyze the action that they just had. They also really prefer reflection over action, and they learn best by reflection, and they would rather kind of process things internally until they're perfect before they like let that thought out into the world. They're going to be more guarded with their, they prefer written communication over a face-to-face communication. So now I feel like everybody texts, but when text was first like a thing, I had a friend who, everyone talked on the phone, like that's just what we did, but I had a friend who just really loved to text, and I was like, this is weird. But now I know like she's an introvert, and now everybody texts. But at that point, it was just like, it was just different to text first. They also
usually prefer to work alone, and they don't mind being in the background. I will just say this to you all as you think about yourselves and your children, that being shy is not synonymous with introversion or extroversion. You can have an outgoing introvert and you can have a shy extrovert. That just has more to do with like your social, kind of how you were raised and what your experiences have been. So, you know, can't kind of keep that in your mind as you think about even your children. So these are just some words that describe the two. Does everyone have some clarity around their own personal preference in this one? Yeah? Okay. Yeah.
Can it change?
Well, it typically won't change, but when we become mothers, we tend to become, either can happen, but the majority of us, if we do have a preference for extroversion, we'll start to desire some more alone time because we're just never alone. Like we all need some alone time, right? But that's one thing that really does happen. We'll start to say, I feel like I'm a little bit more introverted. It's because they're just always there. I mean, yeah. Mm-hmm. So, okay. If you know, you're aware of your own, if you have a preference for extroversion, I want you to look at this list and select one that would be maybe an insight for you. Okay, and we're going to talk with a friend in just a minute. So pick one of those, kind of hold it in your brain or write it down. Okay, and then if you prefer introversion, look at this one and pick one of these. That's an insight for you. Okay, and then this is a couple just for mom self-care. These are really freeing to me whenever I kind of found this. Some ideas for you as a mom. We tend to put, you know, ourselves last. So what could we do to help? Because we'll be better if we have ways to recharge. These two are pretty simple. Find some time with friends or find some time to be by yourself. Okay, so now you're going to pair up with one person and you're going to just share the insight that you had from the extrovert and introvert list or something from the mom self-care and just talk about it for a few minutes. All right. We're going to keep going. And I'll give you another chance to talk in just a second. So now here are, as you're thinking through yourself, you might have a child who maybe one of these really stands out for. I will give you a little bit of, all I have really with babies is personal experience. But I will give you a couple funny stories about my introverted and extroverted babies. So our third child, he has a preference for introversion, and I literally thought the child was Jesus. He was the easiest baby in the entire planet. All he wanted to be was with me. He loved his schedule. He didn't care about anything else, and as a baby, it made for, and he was the third. So, like, the fact that he was fine with, like, not being in the middle of all of it was just so, so wonderful. So that was a real gift. He became an insane toddler, but that is just what happens, right? They like to switch things up on you. So he was very content to just be with me, to not be in the middle of stuff, and he loved his schedule, and he loved to be by himself. He didn't mind being in his bed, you know, like laying in the crib for a while, which was great. Our first son, I had to stop nursing him at 4 months because he only wanted to face outward. He would never sleep. He wanted to be in the middle of all of the action all of the time. He insisted on not being on a schedule. And he was on, we'll go about the last letter too, kind of talk about that. And now he is literally the most highly extroverted person. If there's something fun going on, he wants to be in the middle of it. And it was like that from day one. And I thought, oh no, this child is going to be so hard. But once he like could feed himself and be in the middle of the action, and he's just really became a piece of cake. So Not that that makes a child a piece of cake, but even if they're a hard baby does not mean they're going to be a hard toddler child. Any of that. Yes. It is no. Anyway, but those were my experiences. Those were the most drastic. My other two are also different, but those were the two just very drastic differences in children that I've experienced. So a few things about children to think of as you're raising a child who has a preference for extroversion is to really think for how you can help them have more relationships and have some relationships that are outside of just your family, because they're going to really want that. Allow them, they're also probably going to be more physically active, and give them the freedom to do that, and know that if they don't get it out before bed, they might struggle to fall asleep, because again, they don't like to be by themselves. So if they don't have a lot of physical activity and then they're left alone to go to sleep, they might have a harder time doing that. Also ask them about their day right off the bat. They're usually ready to talk about it. And they really need to discuss things that are important. They need to be able to verbalize. So they also need those. They're going to talk more than you want them to. They just are. They're just going to keep talking. And you're going to, sometimes, I remember one time having one situation where I told my son, I was trying to get stuff done, and I said, you can keep talking, just know that I'm not sure I'm going to be able to listen to all of it. He was fine with that. He just kept talking. I was like, great. Okay. And then, yeah, expand their network is if you can. They will enjoy that. They are the ones who like the big birthday parties, who, you know, want to know all their cousins and, you know, all that kind of stuff. Then if you're raising a child with a preference for introversion, they are going to probably really need some time to decompress when they come home. They want to be by themselves. They may not tell you very much right at the beginning. They're going to be like the bedtime talkers, and allow space for that as well. And don't schedule them. We have this temptation now to schedule our children out and give them a lot of activities. And your extroverted children will probably be awesome with that. Your introverted children are not going to want that. They're going to need some downtime and some time to not be around a lot of people. And they might be great just being with you, but they may not want to be with, you know, a soccer team right after they've been at school all day. So those are just good things to think about. And this is good. Invite them to listen to you first and then ask them for their thoughts. Sometimes an introvert doesn't want like a barrage of questions. And figure out how you can practice some written communication and for them to get out their thoughts, but also for them to communicate with you. My daughter last year got a phone. She can only text girls, but she loves to text me. Like, that's how she likes to tell me things. I would like for her to tell me face-to-face, but she would really, a lot of times, if it's something hard or a question, or even if she wants to tell me something that's bothering her, she would rather send me a text first, and then we can talk about that. So, and silent companionship is good. My husband and my daughter are introverts, and my husband is like, it's great. We can just be in the car for 30 minutes together and nobody says anything. It's awesome. Like, that sounds weird, but cool. That's cool. Okay, so now just for your table, you guys can talk through. I'll put those back up, but any insight that, you know, you have around just your children, parenting children with different preferences, and maybe what you think your child's preference is. So... Uh-huh. Yeah, that's a good question. How do we balance that? I don't know that I do it super well. Our son, who's really extroverted, is in the school plays before school, and then he stays after school and runs cross country, and he's cool with that. But he just does it, and I mean, I just bring him to school early and pick him up later, and the rest of us go home. My youngest, who's an extrovert, he's just the youngest, so he doesn't get to do all the things he wants to do because we just don't have the time or the margin. So I'm like, sorry, maybe later. But the hardest for us is our youngest to share a room, and one's an introvert and one's an extrovert. So that sometimes we just have to give our 9-year-old a little bit more time and ask Silas. Thankfully, Silas has another brother who they both really like constant interaction, so they buddy up a lot and just play. In the car, my big struggle in the car is that my extroverts and my daughter, actually, they'll talk a ton. And then the one child who is more reserved just never, I mean, there's been so many times in the car being like, is Beckett in here? Is he here? I just, like, he just wants to sit in the back and not say a word. And then I have to really be intentional to, like, draw him out, because the other ones will monopolize all of the talking. And if y'all are introverts, you know that if an introvert starts to speak and then is interrupted, they're like, done. And that's hard for a child who is in the middle of an extroverted family. So we have to talk about, like, when Beckett's talking, please respect that, because he does not want to keep talking if you're going to talk over him. So it's just mindfulness and making them aware. Yeah. But that's a good question. Yeah, y'all have time at your table and kind of talk through that. All right. Does anybody have anything that was a good insight or thought they'd want to share? Mm-hmm. Yes, I think that girls do tend to just be more talkative in general. They're just more open usually with, I don't know if they're more open or they're just more aware. It could be of, like, what they're feeling, what's going on. So yeah, you'll notice it more in things like they'll need to be alone to recharge. They may get overwhelmed in social settings. They might get overwhelmed if their schedule is too busy. That's where we really see it with our daughter, is if we schedule her out too much. She used to dance. And, I mean, ballet on top of schoolwork was like, it just was too much, because she didn't have any time to kind of decompress. So I do think with the girls, it can look a little bit different. They may be more ready to talk more quickly than your boys might be. With you, you'll also, you know, I think it's good as they get into school, you might see things. We saw that with our daughter when she went to school, that she was much more reserved than we expected her to be. And I think it's because that was an environment she wasn't really comfortable with, so she was guarding herself more. So you might see that more, you know, as they enter into a new season. You'll see an introvert they're gonna be slower to decide if they really want, like, someone to be their friend. They're going to be slower to decide, yeah, if they want to insert their opinion or their thought into something. And they might just, they're not going to probably like a new environment as much as an extrovert might. Yeah, I think that's a good insight. Yeah, girls might show us a little bit different side to us. To the world, they might look pretty similar to the boys. Yeah. Anything else? Uh-huh. I heard you talking about him and how he likes to, sounds like he likes to be by himself, or he's good to be. Yeah. 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 But he's a baby. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know that there's a lot of research out there on that, but I do know that from my experience, the introverts don't mind nearly as much being just put in their beds and going to sleep. So you might see him more stressed. He may become easily, like, if you're in a really, like, a large group where there's lots of noise, and just that might be more unsettling to him than just, you know, having his place. And yeah, he's like, oh. Yeah. Too much stimulation. For sure.
That's interesting what you just said, Christy. With my youngest daughter, when she was an infant, she would calm when there were tons going on. And she's my extrovert.
Yeah.
But I didn't know that at the point. She likes to be where the action is.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really interesting, isn't it? And I love that this is how we have been wired by God to interact in the world. This is how we desire to live, and we need extroverts and we need introverts, right? We need both, and I love how he has just given this kind of this inborn longing to experience the world, which is really cool. So okay, we're going to go on to J and P, and this is how we prefer to live. The words are judging and perceiving, and I was even, as I was talking to my kids about this last night, three of my four have a judging preference, which is, I have a perceiving preference, so it's just real hard in my, they keep me on my toes because they want to know all these things I don't know yet. But they're like, so weird, we judge, we're judgmental. I'm like, no, you're not judgmental, you have good judgment. So think of that as like having good judgment, not being judgmental. Someone with a judging preference likes to arrive at conclusions. So they're going to want to make decisions and move on to the next thing. That's why it's, they say good judgment. Perceiving, someone with a perceiving preference is really loves to live in the moment and enjoying what is right now. So they're going to be more, they just really like to experience the world. They're going to want to remain open and explore and adapt to new situations and new information. They're not really interested in organizing the world, or someone with a judging preference really wants to organize all those things that come into their life. They want things to be orderly, and they do like to, like I said, come to closure and act on decisions. So we use both. But usually not with equal comfort. Anyone who has a perceiving preference has to exercise that non-dominant side to function, specifically in like a work environment. So when you're thinking about this one for yourself, try not to think about your work world, but more about like your weekend world, especially before you had children, because when you have children, you're in work world all the time. Okay, so here are just some ways that we can see. People who prefer judging want things to be settled and ordered. Okay, they finish tasks before the deadline. They like goals and results. And they prefer to limit surprises. They'll say, usually someone with a judging preference is like, if it's a good surprise. Otherwise, they're skeptical of them, though. They like to draw conclusions, and they usually quickly commit to plans or decisions. I have a friend who, even like as a mom of littles, when we all had little bitties, would schedule her calendar out like 4 weeks in advance, and that was what was comforting to her. She needed to know what was happening in the future for there to be kind of a comfort in like today. But someone with a perceiving preference is going to find that to be really stressful, even to do that. So someone with a judging preference is going to see routine as effective. They trust the plan. They really like to have life under control. And they're going to, if they're working too close to a deadline, they're going to have a lot of stress. So parenting, especially mothering in the season you're in right now, is stressful simply because there are so many unpredictabilities. You do not know when your child is going to do a certain thing. You don't know if you're going to get any sleep. There's all these what ifs, and with a judging preference that can cause some stress because you just can't order your world the way that you'd like to. Someone with a perceiving preference wants things to be flexible and open. They finish tasks at the deadline. They're gonna get their best energy right up at the end. They like to see what turns up, and usually are kind of the people you say, oh, they just kind of go with the flow. They enjoy surprises, and they would prefer to stay tentative for as long as possible. So they're going to be very uncomfortable committing to anything 2, 3, 4 weeks out. That's gonna be stressful to them, especially with small children, because you never know. They reserve the right to change plans and decisions. A growing for perceiving preference is to make sure that they share that they don't commit to something when really in their mind they're thinking maybe. So that's an easy thing to do. They see routine as limiting, and they really trust the process. The process is more important than the outcome usually to someone with a perceiving preference. Someone with a perceiving preference does not really mind all the change. They don't mind if one day the day starts at 6 a.m., the next day the day starts at 8 a.m. That doesn't really bother them. The struggle for someone with a perceiving preference is because children are so distracting, then it's really hard to ever actually get something done because the child interrupts the thing that you're doing, and then you forget to ever go back to it. So like attention in our home, I have a perceiving preference. My husband has a judging preference. And when we had small children and he would come home from work, Yeah, it was like a bomb had gone off in our house every single day. And I had no, like, I just didn't even know what to do about it. And I didn't really care. And so it was a lot of stress because in his mind, he equated that that with love and with me, my care for him, the fact that, so because his external environment is very important to him, where mine just isn't. And so it was a big source of tension. He didn't feel loved and valued and honored and respected and all those things that it's really important for a man to feel. And I was like, I don't get it. You know, I just didn't understand. Like, I'm taking care of the kids. They're all alive. So what's the problem? So we had to work through that. And I have had to learn to do the thing that I don't care about because it's a way of loving him well. So, and in the end, I like it. I mean, I want to have a clean house, but it was rough. Okay, so this is how someone with a judging preference performs a task. They're going to get a task, and then they're going to, you can think back to college or high school or something, you would get an assignment. Someone with a judging preference is going to get that assignment, and then they're going to look at when the deadline is, they're going to work backwards, and they're going to make it like a task list, and they're going to get it done. And they're going to usually have some time to spare. It's going to be orderly. It's going to be responsible. These people, you say they're very responsible, reliable people, and this is how they're going to want to do it. So if the deadline gets changed, not happy. They will not be happy because that just messes up the whole thing. Okay, this is how someone with a perceiving preference gets a task done. So they're still going to finish it if they have a deadline. If they don't, they won't ever get it done. But if they have a deadline, a perceiving preference will get the work done. It is just going to look completely different. And for the first 7/8 of the time, it's not going to look like they're really doing anything. But they're going to get the stuff done. They just have they're thinking and deciding what they're actually going to do all during the beginning. And at the end, they're going to have this real burst of energy, and they will get it finished. So this causes a lot of stress for someone with a judging preference. Now, someone with a perceiving preference will utilize what the judging preference does because they know that it's wise, but this someone with a judging preference is like, I don't ever going to do anything like that. That's crazy. But you're going to have a child who does have a perceiving preference, and that's going to be really fun. Okay, so here are some different words to help you. And remember, think about like a Saturday, how you would spend a Saturday, not how you would spend like a work day, if you got to decide. Think about how you schedule your time. Are you kind of like a large chunk of time? We'll see like what gets done in that time. Are you like, okay, I really want to know like hour by hour how my day is going to go? Those are some big differences. Everyone has a schedule. They look very different for perceiving preference. Is everyone clear on what their preference is on this one? Yes? Good. Okay. So if you have a judging preference, I want you to look at this list. And I'm going to read in this time because I had a hard time knowing like when I should change a slide. So relax, enjoy the journey. The journey is important, not just the arrival. Try to remain open to new inputs and ideas that may ultimately save you time and money. Because someone with a judging preference likes to draw conclusions, sometimes when they've made a decision, they don't want to reconsider. We don't live in a perfect world. The original plan will change. Options equals opportunities, just meaning it's okay to have a few options. Trying to over-control your family and environment will only lead to stress and burnout. Okay? Let perceivers meet deadlines in their own way, but never let them miss one. This is really good for when you have children, too. Beware, or when you have children who are in school, that's what I'll say. Beware the inbuilt superiority complex. Someone with a judging preference really does think their way is better. Learn to value the flexibility and troubleshooting skills of the perceivers, okay? And work will always be there. Take the time to be with those you love. Housework will always be there. Take time to be with those you love, okay? Okay. Pick one, and you're going to get to discuss it in just a minute. Okay, if you have a perceiving preference, deadlines affect others, not just yourself. And this is even little things. As a mom, this might be that you promised a friend you would do something. So do it, even if you don't feel like it. You told your husband you have a, okay, example. I currently have papers in my car that I'm supposed to take to someone. It's a folder. I'm supposed to take it to somebody. I haven't done it yet. My husband is out of work, out of town. He's going to be back tomorrow. I really need to do it before he gets back. If I don't, he will not feel loved, okay? So I've got to get it done, but I don't want to. I don't want to do it. That's just the reality. But I'm going to do it because I love him, okay? Be consistent and disciplined in your external communication. Perceiving types can sometimes be all over the place in how they talk. You need a sounding board for new ideas. Find someone who understands that what you're saying is provisional. What this means is a lot of things someone with a perceiving preference says is not like set in stone. It's just thoughts. So make sure your husband knows that. That's good. Honor the plan. Communicate you respect others' plans and schedules. We kind of talked about that. When judges perceive you as inconsistent, you undermine your credibility and communicate a lack of value for the relationship. Learn to value and deploy the expertise of those with a judging preference. They create a sense of security, consistency, and confidence that perceivers don't. And use provisional plan and promise to clarify expectations. Again, this just means when you make a plan with someone, make sure they know if you're like 100% committed or if it's a maybe. The same thing with things you want to do. Like if you tell your husband, I really want to take the kids to the aquarium on Friday. Make sure that he knows if you're like, I am planning on taking the kids to the aquarium on Friday, or I'm just thinking about it, it might be a good idea. That kind of thing. Okay. Oh, then this is self-care stuff, which is so good. Judging types need to be able to make a plan, have a place or need a place or project to organize, control, and complete. Make a list, organize your desk, set a room in order, finish a project around the house. Consider volunteer and employment opportunities that provide and require structure and control. Perceiving types need freedom from a tight schedule. Give yourself long blocks of unscheduled hangout time. Break your routine once in a while. Go on an adventure, play hooky, dance on the table. Our family does a bike ride at the beach. Everyone with a judging preference picks where they want to go. We drive to that. We bike to that place, and then we bike back. With a perceiving preference, they just have to follow us. You never know where you're going to end up. But that's what we value. So we get to be a part of each other's journey, right? Okay, so now you're going to pair up and talk about an insight from that. Okay. We're going to go on to some tips. We'll keep talking after this. We're going to go on to some tips for raising a child with a preference for judging, okay? If your child really likes the schedule, if you can tell that brings comfort to them, if they already do things like put all their little trucks and cars in like perfect little lines, and they're 3 and they already like to clean their room, they might have a judging preference. So here's some good things for them. Provide household structure, even if it's just 1 or 2 routines a day. This is really good for them to help your judging child feel grounded and comfortable. Things like a consistent bedtime, things like a consistent nap time, things like even if it's like a snack that's very similar, or you know that every day they know they get to pick from these 3 options. Those things are very comforting to them. Begin the day by telling your child about any plans. Even if they are sketchy or still in process, but tell them if they're sketchy or still in process. Don't tell them it's happening if it's not. I have a friend who has a judging preference, and she asked me to meet with her kids because she felt like she and her daughter were super different. Like they were just so different. They kept clashing. She couldn't figure out what was going on. So I met with them and I went through Myers-Briggs with them. They're only off by this letter. She and her daughter have all 3 of the other letters the same. But this one letter was off. So every day she was doing this because this is what she likes. She has a judging preference. She was telling her daughter every day, this is what we're doing today. 4 or 5 things. That would bring comfort to her because she has a judging preference. It stressed her daughter out so much. She would basically panic. And I said, she was like, should I just not schedule my day? I said, no, schedule your day. Just don't tell her what it is. Just tell her like right beforehand what you're doing instead of the whole thing. But if you have a judging preference, this is really valuable to them. Give a judging child something to control to develop planning and organization skills rather than always following your plan. Do it his or her way when appropriate. This can be hard if you like things done a certain way, but try to loosen that a little bit so that they can develop their way. Our youngest is the most, he loves to help. He loves to help so much, but he also loves to micromanage. So sometimes that's hard for me. I'll say, you just do it yourself then. If you're going to tell me how to make your peanut butter and jelly sandwich, I'm going to let you do that. So it's great. Give them some responsibility. They like more responsibility and more authority. So give them more if you can. If there's things you can give them to do to be in charge of, if it's feeding the dog, if it's letting them make a decision, that kind of thing. So if you're raising a child with a perceiving preference, allow your perceiving child free time after school to unwind. Be careful not to overstructure their time. So just make sure that they can decide what to do with their time some. Factor playtime into any task, okay? So if you're, when your judging child gets home from school, they're going to want to sit down and do their homework and get it all done. If you have a perceiving child, they're not going to want to do that. They're going to want to come play, and then they might want to do one math sheet, and they might want to play some more, and they might want to read the book. So you can decide if you have time for that. That's really good for them to let them take some breaks, because their productivity after about 15 minutes is going to just tank. So if you can let them do something for 15 minutes and then go and then come back, you can make it predictable for you, but you know that they're going to have more time to get things done. I think this is also really helpful with the morning routine if you have a child who has a perceiving preference. They might need to wake up earlier than your other children. They might need a little bit more of a runway to get ready in the mornings. Mornings are just so fun, so fun. Help them anticipate the day ahead. Peas live life in the moment and don't naturally plan ahead like Jays. So this one father's solution to forgotten homework was to anticipate every class for the next day together with his daughter and put everything she needed in her backpack before bed. This one, I feel like the blind leading the blind on this one, but my child with a perceiving preference, if it's daily homework, we're cool. But when it comes to projects, we are a disaster in our house. I'm not looking a month ahead. He's not looking a month ahead. And so it would get to be like 2 days before or the night before. He's like, Mom, I have a project due. Do you have what you need for it? No. When is it due? Tomorrow. I'm like, okay. So I had a friend tell me, start writing it down on the calendar, like, do this for the project, do this for the project, do this for the project. Because that child with a perceiving preference really needs some support and help with those things. And limit their options when making choices. So give them some choice, but don't give them every choice. They're going to be overwhelmed by it. So maybe give them like two options for what to wear or for what to eat. And they're going to be more comfortable letting other people do things for them probably. So be careful of that too, because you don't want them to, especially if they're surrounded by siblings, they might figure out a way for everybody else to do their stuff. Okay. So now you're going to take some time to just talk at your tables about maybe if you recognize any of these things in your children, or if there's anything that you could take away. And even if you don't yet, one thing you could think about is if you have a judging preference, what you could be thinking for if you end up with a child with a perceiving preference or vice versa. Yeah. Yeah, I don't really know. I mean, a perceiving preference is more likely to have ADHD, but I don't know. I'm sure there are exceptions to anything. So, yeah. Yeah, and all four letters make up your type, so there are different nuances with different things. Like if you have it could definitely be. Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure. Okay. Y'all take some time to chat about that one. Okay, we are going to blaze through one more letter, and we just have a few more minutes, so we're going to try to blaze through this one pretty quickly, and this is one that I would love for you to investigate for yourself, but then also kind of keep in the back of your mind as your children become, specifically as they get into school age, okay? Because this is sensing and intuition, and it's how you prefer to take in information. So it really applies very heavily to how we learn. So let's talk about this for a minute. And like I said, it might help you, but then also as your children get a little older. So if you think about someone with a sensing preference really likes to take in and present information in a sequential step-by-step way, okay? They're more linear thinkers, and they're going to want even an order in the way that things are presented to them. They don't want things left out. They want all the details. Okay, someone who has an intuitive preference is going to take in and present information in like a snapshot or a big picture way. They're going to just want to see, give me the big picture. It's that person who says, just give me the big picture. And then they want to fill in the details themselves. All right? We even do this in school. So people with a sensing preference, like they really focus on present realities. They're usually very good at being in the present. They have verifiable facts and experiences. They want to know what is. They're like, give me reality, people. That's what they want, okay? Someone with a preference for intuition really likes to be innovative. They focus on future possibilities, the big picture, and insights. The cry of the intuitive is, tell me what could be. They're all about possibilities, right? Y'all can look at this, but I'm going to kind of blaze through it. If you have ever made a decision based on like your gut or a sixth sense type thing, that's more of an intuitive. Someone with a sensing preference is usually going to really try to get all information before making a decision. They want to know what the variables are. They want things that are definite. Okay, we're going to skip that part. Okay, sensing types tend to also to communicate in a step-by-step fashion, and they like to be communicated with like this. So in school, they really want the teacher to give them a step-by-step, if they have an assignment, they want a detailed explanation of how they're going to do that assignment. And they have a hard time following someone who doesn't communicate like that. Intuitive types tend to make leaps and go off at tangents. Specifically, if you're an extroverted intuitive, you are going to be more likely to lose people a little bit if you're telling a story. Someone with an intuitive preference is going to tell a story, and one time it might have this detail. One time it might have this detail. The big picture is going to be the same, but they might leave out bits and pieces. And really, it's because sometimes they actually don't remember. And then sometimes it's because what they care about is getting across the moral of the story, not all the specifics. Someone with a sensing preference is going to make sure they tell the story in order and with all the details the same every time. That's going to be important to them. Okay, now, what do you see? Sensing types often describe a blue circle, a square, and a triangle. They focus on the specific details. They generally build a picture of reality carefully, tending not to leave out or leap over steps in the process. This is usually, the next slide is what an intuitive usually sees when they look at those pictures. They're looking for patterns. Okay, someone with an intuitive preference is looking for the pattern. They want to find trends. They just assume that everything is interconnected, and they might. So I like the idea that an intuitive is going to miss the trees for the forest, where a sensing preference is going to miss the forest for the trees. Okay. 70% of people have a sensing preference, and only 30% have an intuitive preference. You might say, why is that? Probably because if we didn't have more sensing, people with sensing preference, we wouldn't get anything done. The intuitive one, someone with an intuitive preference is the one who's going to come up with a big idea, and someone with a sensing preference is usually the one who's going to figure out how to actually make that thing happen. So we need both, but sensing preference is usually more hands-on. In school, they're going to be better. They're going to really want, they're going to be those like learners who really need to practice, who need lots of repetition, who want hands-on activities to be able to learn things. They need lots of examples. Someone with an intuitive, and they would prefer an assignment that has a lot of explanation, or an intuitive preference, just give me the big picture and they're going to run with it. But then they might not be so good at like spelling or remembering all of the details of what's supposed to happen. They would probably rather write an essay, though, and, you know, love spell check. Okay, so here are some words for sensing and intuitive. Sensing is going to be more concrete, and intuitive is going to be more abstract in how they take in information. And we really need both. Ideally, we would use our five senses to take in all the information, and then we would use our intuition to discover all the possibilities. But we typically lean on one, and intuitive is going to leave out some of all those details and maybe make a decision without seeing all of the risks and potential. Whereas sensing preference will take in all the details, but then sometimes really struggle to figure out what could be next from that. Okay, intuitives. That one's a little harder, but does everybody have an idea of what their preference is on this one? Yes. We'll keep talking about it for three more minutes, and then we'll talk about our kids too. So, just some things some insights if you're an intuitive is to remember that details are important. To also remember to build a bridge for someone with a sensing preference. If you say, "I think we should do this, this, and this," they're going to want to know how it's going to be accomplished. If you know how it's going to be accomplished, share that with them. If you don't, then ask them to be a part of figuring that out, because they're going to be a little skeptical if you don't have the bridge built. Learn to smell the roses. Someone with intuitive preference struggles with really being present because they're constantly kind of thinking about what could be next. All right? In a positive way. They're thinking about it positively, but it still is very can be very distracting. Be present. And be aware of change for change's sake. So if you're a person who just really gets bored quickly, you want to move on to the next thing, be careful. Sometimes staying in the same thing for a long time is really good. We just don't always like to do it. And then beware the intuitive superiority complex. So intuitives on this one tend to feel like they might have a leg up because they tend to maybe think a little faster. That's really just because they're not really looking at the they're looking at the big picture, they're not looking at the details. So just be careful of that. In school, an intuitive is typically able to grasp concepts faster, so that can also build some superiority complex, more because someone with a sensing preference is really going to want to make sure that they understand first. Okay, sensors, don't be intimidated by the eloquent and charismatic communicator. Ask your questions. You're really valuable. You represent the majority, and so make sure that you are asking your questions that you might not be sure about in a respectful way. I'll say this with your spouse. If you're a sensing preference and your spouse has an intuitive preference, ask your questions mindfully and try to not, like, ask five at once. Maybe ask one question at a time. In a way that they know you're for them. You're not just, like, poking holes at, you know, what they – don't burst their bubble. Try not to anyway. Failure is an essential part of life. So know that if you make a mistake, if you go the wrong way, that's okay. The Lord will use all those things, and we are living in his divine will. And so we can trust that even if we're listening and we're longing to follow him, we can still step out even if we don't do it perfectly. Yeah, we talked about that. Okay. As a mom, sensing types, do things that enrich your five senses. Do things like go to a museum, work in the yard. Yard work can be great for someone with a sensing preference. Take a walk in the woods, spend a day at the mall. Sensing preferences are usually like magazines. Magazines are something that they might prefer, or an intuitive type is probably going to want to read like a novel. My intuitive types need ideas, perspectives, and dreams. And this can be really hard as a mom because we can get really, really lost in the day-to-day stuff. So if you have a preference for intuition, give yourself some freedom to dream and to know that those things, like those the things that are so sensory-focused and that are so detail-oriented, are going to be pretty exhausting to you. So take a break from it if you can, and let your husband know, even like if he's a sensing preference, and my husband, I don't know, he can do stuff. So I'll be gone for a day. I'll come home and like, I don't know, every single thing is done. It would take me like a week to accomplish. I don't get it. But it's because he has this like sensing preference where he is energized by doing these things that I suck the life out of me, but cool. We're like, you should have been the stay-at-home mom. No, I'm not, but when I was, like, maybe it should have been you. Take a class, read a novel, watch a fantasy movie, talk to an interesting person, learn something new, but give yourself time to plan, imagine, and entertain possibilities, okay, if this is your preference. You know what I think is really fun as an intuitive type? Is to dream about heaven. Dream about the new Jerusalem that is to come. Think about that. Like, really think about that and dream about that. It's really sweet. Okay, so we are going to actually, we got to go. Okay, you are going to get a handout that has all of these tips. So I will not read any more of these. You're going to get a handout for these. And I would just encourage you as your children grow to be on the lookout for maybe some of these preferences. Sound good? Does anybody have any? I'm sorry, we're going to have to be done for the day. I wish I could keep going. But does anybody have any questions for me before we wrap up? Yeah. Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah, that's good. Yeah, you could definitely do that. You could talk to him about it. Talk to your spouse about it. Just say, hey, I don't want to be a nag, but I know that I see things and remember things that you might not. So what would be a great way for me to communicate with you? It might be that you need to set calendar invites or reminders that are not, it's like not you, but it is you. You know what I mean? Yeah, exactly. Something like that might help. Yeah, for like I have a child right now who has Alexa goes off about every 5 minutes telling him what to do next. It's so funny, but it's better than me, you know? So, and her tone just stays real steady, where mine would get real crazy. So she just keeps talking to him. Beckett, this is a reminder. Go brush your teeth, you know. So anything else? And I'm here if y'all want to come chat with me whenever we're done. So let me pray real quick for us. Father God, thank you so, so much that you that you just decided that you wanted to create us. That you had this beautiful picture of your triuneness for us to see as an example of unity and of perfect communion, and that you're calling us to that, and it is impossible without you. But would we? I just pray for these mamas and their babies and their husbands that there would be just unity, sweet communion in their homes, and that they would be for one another. That they would see the beauty in one another and call it good, and these things that seem very different, they would see as being so very beautiful. So I thank you for this time, and pray that our days, we would go out from here and just love well. In Jesus' name, amen.
Thank you, Christy. Y'all, real quickly, I just want you to know, first of all, y'all have got so much to think about when you go home. It's fun watching your kids grow up. I remember when my oldest was 2, one morning, we always got up and just ate breakfast. He was always in his pajamas, you know, and his baby brother was in his, footy pajamas. He was newborn. And so one morning we had to get out the door. So I said, come on, we're going to get dressed. We're going to eat breakfast in the car. We've got to go, blah, blah, blah. And he looked at me and went, I eat breakfast in my pajamas. And I said, no, I know, but today it's going to be different. We got to get dressed. We got to go out. I eat breakfast in my pajamas. I eat breakfast in my pajamas. I eat breakfast in my pajamas. And he just got so upset. And I thought, okay, it's all right. It's okay. But I thought, okay, note to self. Pattern routine is very important to him. Like if I would tell him the night before, hey, tomorrow morning when we get up, we're going to get dressed and leave home before we have breakfast. You're going to have breakfast in the car. He'd be perfectly all right. But his whole life, you had to give him a heads up. This is how tomorrow's going to look different. And he'd be fine. But if I sprung it on him, but I just remember that thinking, oh my gosh, I'm like, actually, like you have a Pop-Tart in the car. But I eat breakfast in my pajamas. I eat breakfast in my pajamas. You know what I thought? Oh. But it was good to find that out at 2. So I tucked that in the back of my mind, and that's the way he always was. Give him a heads up.